10 years, Ruth Reichel has been editing Gourmet Magazine and thinking about how Americans eat. Ruth Reichel is editor-in-chief of Gourmet, co-producer of Gourmet's Diary of a Foodie on PBS, also the author of Memoirs, Tender at the Bone, Comfort Me with Apples, Garlic and Sapphire, and Not Becoming My Mother, which we talked about last time she was here, and we didn't talk about food hardly at all last time.
No, we did not.
So this time we're going to talk about all about food.
Great.
It's nice to see you again.
It's always nice to see you.
I read the Gourmet, your editor, you know, your editor's column in Gourmet. Now I forget, was that, it must have been this month, where you talked about this Gourmet Today.
Yes, it was October.
And you you talked about how this cookbook, which is big.
Yes, and you've got just the bound galley there, not the real hard bound thing.
I can't make the big noise about, but how you saw a change in more than just something that foodies would pay attention to, a change in the way many Americans are relating to their food.
It's a huge change, and it's happening really, really quickly.
It is.
I really think that American food has changed more in the last 5 years than in the entire previous history of American cooking.
And is that because? So, what are those changes?
A lot of it is the wider availability of all kinds of ethnic ingredients. I mean, things that you used to have to go to specialty stores are suddenly in everybody's supermarkets. There's a huge movement towards vegetarian cooking, which has changed the kinds of produce that's available. We now have a generation of young people who really understand, I think really for the first time in a real visceral way, that eating is an ethical act, and that has changed the availability of things like sustainable fish, the organic food, organic dairy products, and certainly humanely raised meats. And these things, which used to be sort of fringe items, you know, the organic section was a little tiny section, is now, you know, every supermarket has a large organic food section, and they you can buy free-range eggs and free-range chickens and grass-fed beef.
And it's selling. People even in, you know, so one of the arguments that people point to is they look at Walmart, what Walmart has done, this huge corporation, and what they've carved out of their otherwise quite a consumer heaven. even there, that there are people who are willing to pay the few cents more to get these products. So it's reaching down to all strata of the society.
It is reaching down to all strata. So yes, it is everywhere, and certainly, you know, the Walmarts, the big supermarket chains are sort of out in the forefront of, you know, suddenly there are Latino ingredients, you know, everywhere, and Asian ingredients, and things that, you know, even 2 years ago we wouldn't have easily put into a recipe. Today, we just assume that people can get, you know, egg roll wrappers and frozen edamame and, you know, 20 kinds of salsa.
Rice noodles with duck and spicy orange sauce. Would this have been in your magazine 10 years ago?
Absolutely not, because we wouldn't have thought that our readers could easily get duck or rice noodles.
And now, Muscovy or Moulard duck breast halves.
And these are available in Costco, in Walmart. They're everywhere.
All right. So what else is in this? Sweet orange marmalade, sriracha or sambal salik.
You're right. So sriracha, another, you know, here is an ingredient that is now ubiquitous, which was not in the supermarket 5 years ago.
It's the big red plastic.
That big, wonderful, spicy, garlicky chili sauce that's made in Gardena, California.
It is?
It
have
is.
Have you been there?
I have not, but...
That'd be something to see. and a half a pound of dried flat rice noodles. So rice noodles, been around longer.
Rice noodles.
But harder.
But not in the supermarket. And there are two things that drive the availability of rice noodles. And one is that there are increasingly people who can't eat wheat, So you're starting to find alternatives to wheat noodles in supermarkets throughout America. And secondly, you know, a much broader Asian influence on what we eat.
Ruth Reichel is our guest, editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine, Gourmet Today recipes, more than 1,000 all-new recipes for the contemporary kitchen. You know, you wrote in that editorial column about the question of meat, and the question for the writer of that article, and then for you, was that he was slaughtering rabbits, I believe.
Right.
And you had to decide whether you were going to include that description of the rabbits screaming in the article. And his argument was, and I guess so is this yours as well, that if you're going to eat meat, you need to understand the honor you have to give to the food. I don't think you used the phrase honor.
No, I mean, it was Thomas Keller, who is a great chef, and this was in my very first issue. We had a profile of him, and there was this description of how he decided that he needed to slaughter his own animals, and he asked his meat provider to bring him the rabbits alive. And it's a very unpleasant description of the killing of these rabbits. And he said at the end of it that it had just been so unpleasant that he knew that he couldn't waste a single scrap of this, because it really brought him to the understanding that food was life itself. And, you know, that's part of what has been lost in the industrialization of food, is that knowledge that when you go and you buy a piece of pork or a steak or a chicken leg, that was once a living, sentient being.
Ruth Reichel is Gourmet Magazine's editor-in-chief. Gourmet Magazine has put out, was it for your 10th anniversary, or just did you guys just decide to do it in general and it fell in the same?
It just fell in my 10th anniversary.
A new book of recipes from the magazine. And were these all in the magazine?
No, a lot of them were. What was not in the magazine that's in the, I mean, this is not just a recipe book. The best part of this book is we have boxes and boxes and boxes on all kinds of tips. There's a box on every vegetable we could think of, how to buy it, how to store it, and, you know, three or four very simple ways to cook it that aren't recipes.
You have a page on broccoli rabe. And you also have a recipe for broccoli flour with anchovies and garlic. That sounds pretty tasty.
It is very tasty.
Broccoli flour? Is that just the flour of the broccoli, or is that
specific? No, it's another one of those.
Oh, it's a cross between a broccoli and the cauliflower.
Yeah, and it's just so interesting. There are all these new vegetables out there.
Fried cardoons, I see.
Fried cardoons are wonderful.
Is that where it starts? Fried cardoons. Are there more recipes? Fried cardoons. Pound of cardoons, 4 cups of vegetable oil, an egg, teaspoon. Coat them a little bit, and then you toss them in the.
And what you end up with is something that has a kind of artichoke-y flavor.
All right. Michael starts us out. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Maybe it's because I live pretty close to Cambridge, Massachusetts, but I wonder how we can do this sort of more intelligent, more thoughtful, more humane eating without falling into the vice of using it as a way of being better than other people, which is both kind of loathsome in itself and also will inevitably create resentment of the sort that ends up in political commercials, you know, saying that certain candidates are the candidates of the latte swilling, and I think they'll add free-range beef eating class.
That's right. Broccoli Rob Chardonnay swilling.
Oh, well, I mean, this is... it's a great question, and, you know, it gets back to the argument of good food is elitist, and I think we can't let the argument be framed in that way. The problem that I see in America today is that food has become a class issue, and we have to stop that. We have to make good, healthy food available to everyone. And that's something that has to be changed on a national level, because the reality is that our tax policy now supports junk food. And it makes no sense for a hamburger to be cheaper than a salad. It's just, it defies logic.
It's about subsidies.
It's about subsidies.
Have you ever looked historically, or maybe, Michael, have you ever looked historically? I mean, how 120 years ago food was prepared by in poor kitchens and wealthy kitchens very similarly. And it was similar ingredients, I imagine, though, you know,
but
you
it
get the butt end of the steak or the butt end of the vegetable rather than the leafy part, perhaps.
But we were a very different country. We were a nation of farmers. And in fact, I mean, if you really look back, that's not really true that we all ate the same thing. I mean, that's what the jungle was about. I mean, immigrants who came here were very poor, and, you know, the meatpacking people were giving them horror food.
Yeah, well, true enough.
But most of America, I mean, if you slice away that bottom of, that level of people who just arrived here and were desperately poor, the truth is that as a nation of farmers, we all sort of ate from the nearby community and ate very similar kinds of foods. That has changed very quickly, and we have to change it back.
Michael, thanks for that. Which of the vegetables are the – well, let's start with most fun. Which vegetable do you have most fun preparing and eating these days?
Well, I myself am enormously fond of watercress.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, watercress – if you like spinach, spinach is a pain to clean. It just is. And watercress has this wonderful spicy flavor, and it's really easy to clean. And if you like – hot food, watercress has a little bite to it.
Okay, fennel, sometimes mislabeled anise in the supermarket. Does that mean what? How do you cook fennel?
Well, I have to admit, I shouldn't be admitting this on national radio. Fennel is not my favorite
because it's so licorice-y.
Yeah, I'm not a big licorice fan, so in my house, you would not be eating fennel.
See, for me, fennel's hard to pair it with other things because of that licorice-y flavor.
Yeah,
it is very strong.
I just think of it as a bully of a vegetable. I have to also admit, my mother loved fennel.
Is that right?
Yes, she did.
The big root of it?
Yes, and she, you know.
Not root.
The bulb.
Bulb, yes.
And she was constantly, you know, feeding us fennel. She also liked blackjack gum, so there you have it. I'll tell you, a wonderful underused vegetable is kohlrabi.
And if you're in a CSA, you get a lot of it towards the end of the year.
You do, and it's just a great vegetable. First of all, it looks so wonderful. It looks like little alien spacemen, little vehicles, you know, Martian vehicles landing. But if you just toss it with a little bit of olive oil and some salt and throw it in the oven, dice it up and throw it in the oven. What you end
peel
up...
Peel it?
You peel it, yeah. And you sort of take that purple, and then you end up with something beautiful, snowy white. But again, you know, real flavor there. You know, this sort of sweet, mushroomy kind of flavor.
So is that sort of the grounding, the change that we're seeing, that people want tastes and flavors, that whereas in the past, I'm being biased here, but the industrialized food gave us more bland sort of palate?
Absolutely. I mean, it you know, we now live in a country where salsa outsells ketchup. And what I've noticed is, since I've been at Gourmet, is the American taste for spicy food is probably five times now what it was. That, you know, things that we used to say in the kitchen, oh, this is way too spicy, no one will want it. Now we're saying, maybe we could ramp that spice up a little bit.
Ruth Reichel is our guest. Gourmet Today, more than 1,000 all-new recipes for the contemporary kitchen. Ruth Reichel is a writer, a memoirist, and editor of Gourmet Magazine. What do you see in the future? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but...
Well, I have to tell you that, I mean, it's very easy to be doom and gloom about where American food is today.
Because all the processing.
Because of the processing, and the farm lobby is so strong. On the other hand, I've been writing about food for 40 years, and there has never been a time when Americans were so passionate about food. Food has really become a part of popular culture. And I'm very optimistic. I mean, I think it is easier to cook good food in America right now than in any other time in my lifetime. And I think we have a generation of kids who understand food, understand its place in our lives, are, you know, interesting. They're sophisticated. They're conscientious. They're ethical eaters. And I think it bodes very well for the future. We also have a president who understands that food is important and that what we feed our children is important.
And a first lady.
And a first lady.
How's that pea patch going of hers? I don't know.
It's going really great. And not only that, I mean, she not only has the garden at the White House, which is, you know, going great guns, but they've also started a farmer's market a block from the White House, and she was the first customer. And they, you know, we really have people now who are leading by example.
By the way, Bob writes, I made a chocolate cake recipe from Gourmet February 2004, I think it was, for Valentine's Day. I made barbecued ribs and the cake, and it was excellent. Thank you very much.
Oh, I'm so glad it worked.
All right, last quick call here. Brian's in Carnation. Hi, Brian.
Hello. I just expanded our home garden this year for the first time quite a bit, and I'm going to be doing it even more next year. And it's gotten me thinking about a concept that I guess I self-describe as low-entropy food, and that is getting the most nutrition out of the food for the least amount of energy to grow it and also energy to cook it. And I guess the example I would use is I just started some butternut squash for the first time this year, and I discovered that in order to really make robust plants, I had to water it a lot and fertilize it quite a bit. And then also the way we cook it is put it into an oven at 300 some odd degrees for an hour.
Do you know that concept, low entropy food?
Yeah, I mean it's a wonderful concept and a concept that more and more people are thinking about. I mean it's sort of taking the carbon footprint to the next level. And, you know, thinking about it on a very domestic level. And, you know, it if you think about it, there's something ridiculous about turning your oven on for an hour for one little thing. And there are many people who are now, you know, thinking very wisely about when you turn your oven on, make sure it's full and, you know, use that heat wisely.
Thanks for that. And thank you, Ruth Reichel. Appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Ruth Reichel is editor of Gourmet Magazine and edited Gourmet Today, 1,000 all-new recipes for the contemporary kitchen. She's also a writer and a TV star as well. This is Weekday on KUOW.